Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Aaron Dykes. Today is Wednesday, August 29th, 2012.
Tonight, on the InfoWars Nightly News, Aaron Dykes speaks with activist Derek Groves about his recent run-in with the TSA in Tampa. Plus, MeR1.com's Kalen Aucherman talks about his anti-globalist artwork. Then, the exploitation of Hurricane Isaac, all in the name of expanding the police state. All that and more, coming up on the InfoWars Nightly News.
We have breaking news tonight as Hurricane Isaac, which has now been downgraded to a tropical storm, has indeed caused massive flooding in Louisiana, not in the concentrated New Orleans area, but about an hour or so outside of that area in the Plaquemines Parish. We've been in touch with our source, Charles, in Louisiana, and we have a number of updated news items for you. They are planning to evacuate the area, and we've been told that the 8-foot levee has definitely been overwhelmed by water, and our reports from Charles in Louisiana indicate the levee itself may have broken, and furthermore, the authorities are considering breaching the levee on purpose to try to divert the water and end the flooding that is going on in that area. Now, apparently, this levee was never improved after Hurricane Katrina because it was so far outside of the main New Orleans area, thus it never got the improvements, but it is certainly taking a serious blow now. Now, our source in New Orleans, in the New Orleans area, that is still in the midst of that hurricane slash tropical storm. That's going to be ongoing for another 18 to 24 hours. So we're going to get further updates from Charles in Louisiana if he still has phone service. They had difficulty getting that phone service earlier. They've been trying to reach our office and give us details about the dusk curfew that has been set not only in the Plaquemines Parish area, not only in New Orleans, but all the way up to the Baton Rouge area, which is well north into the heart of Louisiana, and basically all the areas in between. And police in particular have been emphasizing in their media reports that they're going to keep law and order. Now, we know what happened last time. There was gun confiscation, even in the areas that weren't flooded, and we really hope that's not what they have in mind again. However, this is another situation where they're using any emergency pretext at all to roll in National Guard and other troops. They're going to blur the line once again of Posse Comitatus until everyone is acclimated to this occupation inside our country, the former Republic of the United States. Despite the fact that Isaac is a Category 1 hurricane, Kurt Nemo writes in his article, New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu said the city had dodged a bullet and the Army National Guard had dispatched thousands of troops to Louisiana. Now, Governor Bobby Jindal has basically earmarked 8,000 troops for a 180-day period, and they have another 35,000 troops and plenty of aircraft standing by to occupy that zone. And again, Charles in Louisiana went down during Hurricane Katrina back in 2005 as a volunteer, as did so many other good people in that community. They've been told this time, you will stay in your homes. You will be arrested if you go out after dusk because there's a curfew blanketing all of the Louisiana area. They've been told they don't want ordinary volunteers. They just want police and military and other so-called officials. Now, what's disgusting here is how communities used to help each other when there was natural disasters. But now we have learned to accept the big federal government-driven control, even though they've only proven time and time again they bungle the situation, they respond late, and they cause people to be hurt, killed, robbed from, stealed. They're not helping. They're preventing people from helping, again, by design. And once again, they did confiscate guns in Hurricane Katrina. So we're going to sound the alarm here again, not to confiscate the guns. Troops, whether you're National Guard or other divisions, do not obey orders to confiscate America's weapons, which is protected under the Second Amendment of the Bill of Rights. Of course, the Oath Keepers have been trying to get that message out to as many military personnel as possible, and we hope they hear this call as well. But once again, we have this breaking news that they are preparing to evacuate in that New Orleans area. And I would just add, too, that Charles in Louisiana, I just got off the phone with him a few minutes ago, pointed out that they were beginning to lock down the city issue the curfew orders and tell people not to even go out on the streets. There's no gas. There's no food available. All this happened when there wasn't even rain, before there was ever strong winds. This was a pre-planned event. So we're going to see how it plays out. But they have certainly worked against the best interests of the American people before. Now we will turn to the RNC convention underway in Tampa, Florida, the big circus, the big show to anoint Mitt Romney and have this staged election against Barack Obama, his controlled opposition. Now, Ron Paul shouldn't have been a story in this mix in particular because they worked so hard to censor him and shut him out of the process leading up to this convention. And yet here he is, several big stories, the biggest of which is that the TSA decided to harass Ron Paul and his wife and his aides as they left Tampa yesterday in their private plane. Now, they were at the small airport of Clearwater, Florida, right outside Tampa in the area, and they were told that no one would be allowed to leave until there was an extensive search of all their credentials and identifications, but then also of the plane itself, which they explicitly searched for explosives. Why? Because those TSA agents were there to harass Ron Paul and directly made the insinuation that his plane could be used as an explosive missile device to attack Mitt Romney. Oh, this really happened. Here it is on the Lou Rockwell blog. Kurt Nemo, of course, has the story on the top of InfoWars. TSA harasses Ron Paul and his wife in Florida. But here's this detail. One of the pilots noted that the plane full of aviation fuel was already a bomb, as the several TSA agents indicated that they had to check this plane specifically for explosives because Mitt Romney was in the area. This is Ron Paul, who was accused by many critics for not even attacking Mitt Romney through his words and rhetoric enough, and now here he is being manhandled by the TSA on the pretext that he would be somehow a physical threat in his private plan against Mitt Romney and their little phony parade at the RNC. Well, this all ended when they insisted on patting down his wife, Carol, who has a pacemaker. When she refused, the TSA agents began to get indignant, but one of their aides began filming the incident. They got nervous and ended it quickly. This is the disgraceful incident serving as a vicious parting shot. Those are the words of Kurt, apropos from the establishment, who have once again worked time and again to shut out Ron Paul's supporters and delegates, to silence Ron Paul in media coverage, and make sure he was not seen as a viable, credible candidate within the Republican Party's little game for establishment nomination. Then again, on the convention floor today, yesterday, a hot mic caught further evidence of the establishment's ongoing efforts to censor Ron Paul. Paul Joseph Watson's story, Hot Mic Catches Republican Praising Censorship of Ron Paul. And it was during the roll call at the convention yesterday, the attendee was caught on a hot mic praising the fact that they had done a good job in blacking out Ron Paul when the mic apparently accidentally cut out the listing of Ron Paul's delegates after Mitt Romney's. Those delegates were reread and entered into the official record, but the point being you had key officials who were nearby microphones or directly on microphones being part of that cover-up openly. The quote was, well done. Whoever controlled the microphone did a great job. There's no identification of that RNC individual. Again, this is the same RNC establishment, Republican Party, GOP establishment, who told us that if Ron Paul even won the Iowa caucus, it would ruin Iowa's reputation and hurt the Republican Party. That was all just to try to tell people you're not allowed to choose Ron Paul. Of course, he later won those delegates, but we're getting to the delegate situation as well as they rewrote those rules. But first, let's take a look at the actual video of them praising the fact that Ron Paul's name had been censored out on the floor microphone.
3 votes for Ron.
Okay.
Well done. Whoever controlled the microphone did a great job.
Could I please have the state of Georgia repeat your vote count?
Yes, you can, Madam Secretary. 72 delegate votes for Mitt Romney. We have 3 for Ron Paul and 1 undecided.
Oh, whoever controlled this sham of an election sure did a good job. Well, they had a lot of hands making light work in that effort. Now, you can imagine how much work must have gone on behind the scenes to make sure that all the threats from Ron Paul delegates of making a stink, of making their voices heard, of trying to nominate him from the floor wouldn't happen, so Romney could have this graceful parade celebrating the general election larger sham. Now, part of that was the changing of the GOP rules. Joe Wolverton at New American has the story. RNC disenfranchises Paul delegates, rigs the rules to nominate Romney, and so they've changed some of their technical memorandum rules, which disbarred a number of Ron Paul's delegates, even though he had nowhere near the number at this point in time to get the delegation. In particular, 10 of Maine's 24 delegates were locked out of the process. You recall some of the shenanigans that went on with the Maine vote as well, I'm sure, and they were thus prevented from voting for Ron Paul from the floor. In protest, those Maine delegates walked out of the Tampa Bay Times Forum, leaving them in essence to just play their predetermined winner game. And you can imagine that happens. And this is once again reason why political parties were always warned about by our founding fathers. They're not part of our constitutional process. They're not part of American laws. They make their own internal rules, so it's no surprise to see them rigging the game so that Romney can look like the clear winner with no real competition. Now, on the other hand, there's been a big influence from the grassroots people, from the constitutional voices. The system has heard that message. They've locked you out of the official dog and pony show, but we're still affecting the national debate, not only through Ron Paul, but through hundreds and hundreds of important issues. So just keep up your work at a local level. I don't think we're going to get the answer through the national presidential election political process anyway. In other news, a congressman has called for more research into the safety of airport X-ray scanners, of the naked body scanners, over the radiation issue. It's the Long Island Congressman Steve Israel, and he has indeed made his voice heard. He says, I have a high regard for the TSA, but I also know when government says, trust us, and we don't have to open this up to more scrutiny, that's exactly when you should open it up to more scrutiny. That's what he told WCBS 880 Long Island bureau chief, and went on to make other comments. Certainly, this is a good move. I don't know about praising TSA as being otherwise upstanding. They're pretty much full of scandal from bottom to top. They should start firing from the top, including the Homeland Security Big Sis chief and the umbrella organization over it. But at least it's good that they're going to be looking into these body scanners. They've already had cancer clusters where they first installed the body scanners at Boston Logan. A number of those TSA employees are being hurt and harmed. And as much as this is harmful to not only our civil liberties, but the actual lives and bodies of frequent travelers, you got to imagine this probably affects TSA workers who are there 8 hours a day and have to go through that security as well even more. But look at this Orwellian point in time we've reached. Yes, we need to focus on the body scanners, but he says, we do have an obligation to make sure that our security is safe and that people know it's safe. That's what Rep. Israel said in his comments today. But how Orwellian is that? Not only Benjamin Franklin's prescient advice that giving up essential liberty for the guise of security will not bring you security. Now the security itself must also be safe. So we have to have safety and security for the security that's supposed to keep us safe from the terrorists. Really, really strange moment we're at. I hope we can all just reflect on how paradoxical and nonsensical it is to keep our security safe now. At any rate, we will turn now to our quote of the day because we're facing such a police state presence in country. We're being occupied. Our Constitution's trampled upon. So are the people. Well, have they warned about this? Yes. People saw this coming. One of them was General Douglas MacArthur, the famous American hero, and he wrote, quote, I'm concerned for the security of our great nation, not so much because of the threat from without, but because of the insidious forces working from within. And you better believe that's true. You can look at any area you want, but TSA and these phony sham elections are a pretty good place to start. Furthermore, we have an update from the Marine who was kidnapped over his Facebook post talking about things like Bilderberg and 9/11 truth and how he was concerned about the destruction of the Constitution and the executive orders going on. and thrown into a psych ward. Well, he's made his first public comments since being released after the judge acknowledged the fact they really had no factual basis to hold him on and that he's really just being persecuted and literally threatened with being brainwashed. Very alarming stuff. In his first public comments since being kidnapped by authorities over his political post on Facebook, former Marine Brandon Robb tells John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute that he is scared for his country. His case went viral on the internet earlier this month when on August 16th, the former Iraq and Afghanistan veteran was kidnapped from his home by police, FBI, and Secret Service agents and forcibly incarcerated. Let's take a look at some of the things he had to say.
I go back again. You've served your country well. You're a businessman. You're an upstanding person in your community. How did this impact you physically and even mentally, let's put it that way, being put in a facility like that?
I'm pretty tough, so I roll with the punches. But it made me scared for my country. The idea that a man can be snatched off of his out of his property without being read as rights, I think, should be extremely alarming to all Americans.
Well, you know, as we found out in this case, there are 20,000 of these civil commitments in Virginia alone, hundreds of thousands across the United States where people are being picked up. In your own county, I was told by a reporter, just in the month of August, and it hadn't been completed yet, the month had run its course, there were 20 people had disappeared in your own county like this.
I heard that as well.
So that's scary. It's frightening. This is, like you said, Orwell. It's like out of Orwell's books, Philip K. Dick books, science fiction. So maybe what we're saying here is, and maybe correct me if you think I'm wrong, that fictions become fact. We're living in an Orwellian society. What do you think?
Well, I can give you a perfect example that's true. If you read 1984, George Orwell, in that society, there was something called the Ministry of Truth. Bill Clinton very recently went on record and said that he believed there should be a ministry of truth in this country to monitor the content of the internet.
And it goes on from there, but certainly it is Orwellian. Probably among Brandon Robb's biggest offenses is the fact that he can read. Maybe he hasn't taken enough of his medication. We're getting to those stories in just a moment. But I also want to read this quote that he said. The truth is very powerful and has the ability to cut. The truth is not always nice. He further pointed out that Jesus probably would have also been investigated as a terrorist for encouraging his followers to sell their cloaks and buy a sword. And if that isn't true, I don't know what is. The whole point is they tried to distort his words and make a case about him just to go after him. And they're doing this not just against this individual, that would be a big enough story, but to all kinds of veterans. They're supposed to be heroes when they go over and fight imaginary terrorists to get put in the meat grinder. But when they come home, they're a threat to the natural order of things because we're under a dictatorial takeover. And that's why they're persecuting numerous veterans. This John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute has documented other cases, and I'm sure he's going to be coming forward with that information. Not sure if we're getting him on the show, but we're looking at that. Now, in health and technology news, which are merging more and more, a pill that treats and tells. Better put, a tattletale pill. And these, you've probably heard about these. They've been reported on since at least January. Edible microchips to alert mobile phones of pills not taken. Digital digestible pills that will allow doctors to monitor your medication use. And now they're pushing for them more than ever. Doctors are saying they want their patients to be forced to take these. Doctors who've already been brainwashed and financially bought off by the big pharmaceutical companies are now being encouraged for that little idea of compliance, to make sure their patients aren't just getting the diagnosis and paying the money for the pills, but that they're actually taking them and having their physiology and brain waves rewritten by these wonderful little pills they have. At any rate, if you're having trouble remembering whether you took your pills on time, your medicine may soon have the answer for you. Pills from everything from the common cold to diabetes or cancer can be embedded with tiny ingestible chips that track whether a patient is taking their medication on time. And it goes on to detail the California-based Proteus Digital Health firm. And they say, well, some patients may not like being tracked. Some patients may think it's Big Brother, but it's a good idea, and it doesn't mean you're a bad patient. It's just that we want to have accurate data and make sure you're fully medicated, just like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And I've got a separate ad for a different firm. I hope you can pick this up on the document cam. This is from the Dasalt Systems, and they've got a similar nanotech pill that's going to help keep track of your medication. And it says, in the future, if we want to avoid surgery, can we swallow a robot? And this, again, is stuff that Ray Kurzweil and others talked about, where nanobots are going to be injected into our body. They're going to take care of the medical aspects. Natural cures, of course, will long since be banned by the time that we see these nanobots taking over and really telling us what's best. But what I found in this article that was the most interesting is this is yet another cockamamie idea promoted and funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, now by far the largest philanthropy interest in the world. The Rockefeller Foundation, among others, merged most of their main issues with the Gates Foundation, who focus exclusively, well, I shouldn't say exclusively, they focus predominantly on vaccines around the globe and GMO foods and all kinds of other things that are really strange ideas, like clouding the earth with barium and sulfur particles to change our weather patterns. And by the way, he owns hurricane steering technology. Huge conflicts of interest. Nobody seems willing to hold these so-called philanthropy foundations to account because they have a friendly face of Bill and Melinda Gates in a blue sweater. And they've given money to Proteus, and they've worked with the other nanotech and technology firms, the big pharma firms, the firms in China and Japan, it tells us, the Swiss firm Novartis. All these big pharma entities are being told to adopt and push this technology, a digital pill, the beginning of introducing RFID chips into our body to track what's going on in there. And that's all just a lead up for what you know has been coming, what you know has been on the agenda for decades, the implantable permanent RFID chip they hope they could put under the skin in your hand or maybe somewhere else on the body. But meanwhile, the Gates Foundation hasn't stopped there. They're in the news for other items today, other equally dangerous, perhaps more dangerous proposals. They're funding a variety of proposals listed here on their website, among them an anti-vaccine surveillance and alert system to counter disinformation, supposedly. Disinformation, according to them, about vaccines and their well-known dangers, and to alert authorities that they need to basically monitor people putting out this information. But even more radical, the Bill Gates Foundation is funding and developing and preparing to deploy unmanned aerial vehicles to take vaccines to your home if you're in a rural area. So those who don't comply, who don't volunteer for what they consider mandatory vaccines, will get little home visits from robots. So it's not just the robots and the pills you take. It's going to be the drones showing up your house literally with vaccines, and who knows how things go from there. But they're planning to try to push for universal vaccine adoption. And as usual, they have another dozen or so vaccine-related proposals as they try to pursue total world by vaccination. Who nominated this guy to run the world? Well, his money did, the money he stole from you through his dominance in Microsoft. But what's important about the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is their little proposals, their little grants get adopted by individual nations, and they fund maybe the first round just to get the doors open. Then they saddle those nations with a huge burden and cost of running those vaccine programs. There's a big controversy in places like India and Pakistan where, A, they're suspicious of all this Western intervention, and, B, you have 47,000 cases of polio admittedly caused by the oral polio vaccines. That's just a taste of the problems that this maniacal mad scientist is creating across the earth. As I might mention, he continues to push GMOs everywhere. Remember his crazy proposal to spend more than $1 million developing the galvanic mood bracelets that he would make students and teachers wear in the classroom to try to monitor whether or not they're paying attention to the indoctrination lesson handed down from the global government? Well, that's just the kind of big technocratic stuff they want to run our lives with. This is the stuff the classic socialists who have taken over this world through the collectivist model have been talking about since the early 1900s. People like George Bernard Shaw, who said under socialism you'll be forcibly fed, clothed, taught, whether you like it or not. And if you're not deemed worthy, if you don't have the character, according to George Bernard Shaw, the big Fabian socialist, you'll be executed. Then you've got people like Carol Quigley, Then you have people like Carol Quigley, who are insiders in those Cecil Rhodes roundtable groups, who again were pushing for collectivism in the different Western nations across the planet and the other developing world nations. And he talked about how there's no more political freedom, how the left and right is all an illusion, but then specifically how you're going to be numbered from birth to death, tracked through your military and education records, and all the way down to your retirement benefits, and then to your death itself. They're going to control your life literally from cradle to grave. And it talks about how the experts are going to rule us instead of the people, instead of the popular will, instead of anything that even remotely resembles a democratic process. But look how updated this is in the 21st century with people like Bill Gates, big technocrats, trying to tell us how it is, trying to tell us how to run our lives, trying to tell us we're not supposed to use water or energy and that we need to cut our population. And now he wants to use these high-tech gadgets to make sure the vaccines and big pharma medication is taken. That's the socialist collectivist model they've got us all to adopt. And it doesn't have anything just to do with socialist sentiment. This has to do with big state governments. It's the same thing for the capitalist branded stuff. It's the same thing for the fascist branded countries. Nazism was national socialism. Another brand of the same thing. It's tyranny. It's tyranny, people. And Bill Gates is part of it. I wholeheartedly reject these proposals. They really make me uneasy. Meanwhile, in food and natural news information, we have the corrupt Indian politicians who've been accused of stealing more than $14.5 billion in food that was specifically designated for the many starving poor in India. Apparently, corrupt Indian politicians have successfully stolen more than $14.5 billion worth of food from poverty-stricken citizens, looting over 57,000 tons of food intended for the starving poor. These corrupt lawmakers and politicians have put into warehouse massive amounts of food supplies that they're holding for purposes unknown. Now, Naresh Saxena, a Supreme Court commissioner there in India, called this the most mean-spirited, ruthlessly executed corruption because it hits the poorest and most vulnerable in society. What I find even more shocking, she says, is the lacking willingness in trying to stop it. And all this warehousing of food, controlling of the food supply, not only is it part of totally historical tyranny, just as we saw in places like the French Revolution, just been reading about that, that's why it's on my mind, but this is at a time where we have a drought. Who knows what all are the major causes behind one of the biggest droughts we've ever seen, but it's crimping on the food supply. We've got these crazy carbon policies where they're growing corn for ethanol for fuel production rather than for food, all this cutting into it as there's finally for the first time a debate over speculating on commodities, in particular food, which really gives a financial incentive to do just what they've done with this poor food stock in India, to warehouse the food and bet on its price going up in the future. Very dangerous policies that we're seeing in this day and age, all of it putting major pressure on the global food supply. Really, probably so they could just call for greater population controls, but it's going to hit the poorest first. And these policies, Lord Monckton has come on and analyzed the data and shared it with us, are affecting over a billion people. There's a billion people on the edge of starvation just through policies like ethanol for food. Just through policies like ethanol for fuel rather than for food. Now, on the GMO food front, we have the headline in Natural News, doctors and farmers find that eliminating GMOs prevents disease. Sounds like a no-brainer, but a lot of people don't know this. We need to make sure we're educating people, particularly those in lower income brackets who have a financial incentive not to pay for the costlier foods, to seek out whatever's cheaply available, where those processed foods that are ready to go at the biggest supermarkets contain some of the most dangerous foods. Now, in the most recent years, more and more doctors have started warning their patients to avoid genetically modified foods, and the results are paying off. It cites Jeffrey Smith, probably the leading expert in GMOs, by the way, who's telling us that thousands of doctors have reported the elimination of disease when patients simply cut their intake of genetically modified foods from their diets. It's an elimination of things like immune disorders, arthritis, diarrhea, irritable bowel syndrome, allergies, skin problems, general pain, migraines, restless leg syndrome, and on and on and on. And you can get these results pretty quickly if you just cut the genetically modified foods from your diet. There's something going on there. They don't work well with the body. The body isn't used to recognizing these things, even if in theory they provide some benefit. In reality, they're hurting people. And again, we see the same evidence, not from doctors who deal with humans, but from farmers raising their livestock. As you know, in many places around the world, livestock, whether it be pigs, cows, horses, sheep, have been dying in mass, having spontaneous abortions, having other health issues because they're eating the genetically modified food commodities. Now, the elimination of disease by dropping genetically modified foods has been found in farmers, as I mentioned. Jeffrey Smith points out a Danish farmer who switched to non-GMO soy for his 450 pigs and their offspring. Within 2 days, only 2 days of cutting this diet, the animals' diarrhea problems virtually disappeared, and furthermore, during the following year, after taking them simply off of the GMO foods, the deaths that he had seen in his population of pigs from ulcers and bloating and other complications had vanished. He had up to 36 pigs from his larger 450 or so pigs dying from these kind of complications, but a simple change in the diet changed all that. Now, that should be suggestible to those of you who haven't began avoiding GMOs. I've tried to cut it out completely from my diet, and I'm going to continue to do so, but we need to once again warn others. Now, we turn back to the Tampa Convention and the TSA, who've embedded themselves there, of course, in the name of security. But as we mentioned previously, we have to keep our security safe as well. So that's what the Federal Protective Service goons from Homeland Security for, apparently. Now, the Houston Freethinkers are a local citizen journalist group based here in Texas. They traveled to Tampa to cover the issues, and they saw TSA doing bag checks of journalists, people coming to attend the convention, etc., and began filming it. That's when they were confronted on the street by these black-shirted Federal Protective Service goons, who, of course, operate under the guise of Homeland Security. You've seen these people pop up in places like Occupy protests. I think the city was in Portland, Oregon, but they've been seen all across the country doing police work from a federal jurisdiction in a local area. What's that all about? Well, I'm sure this has been declared a national security special event for the Tampa RNC convention, so naturally the TSA must descend. And it's just crazy. They threatened them with arrest, told them they'd hold them for 72 hours without them being accused of any crime, simply for not providing identification when requested. And with more on that story, we turn now to Derek Brose and other members of the Houston Freethinkers. They are there on scene in Tampa, Florida, at all the ongoings outside of the RNC. Thanks for joining us, Derek.
Hey, thanks for having us on, Aaron.
And I see also Micah there, another member of the Houston Freethinkers. And I don't know this guy, but there's a lot of people doing good work in the Houston Freethinkers group. But tell us what happened on the scene, how you guys were filming, and the incident that occurred with the Homeland Security police, law enforcement officials, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, it was this Monday, which was officially the first day of the RNC. But there was no, you know, action going around there. We went there. We've been here to document all the marches from the Resist RNC group, which includes a lot of Occupy groups from around the country. We've been here to document that action and to cover the police state and any action we can get from within the RNC. Monday, there was a pretty quiet day after some marches, so we decided to go just do our own searching. And the entire city, even away from the Tampa Bay Times Forum where the RNC is being held, has giant metal perimeter fencing, you know, throughout around the county courthouse and different, I guess, points of interest that they're trying to protect. There's high security everywhere. There's National Guard. There's sheriffs. We've seen Secret Service. And so we were out just doing some filming. We happened to be walking past a Greyhound station, and we saw a sign on the front door that said TSA screening notice. And we started videotaping from there, live streaming, open the doors and see three or four TSA agents working with the local cops. And it looked like one even federal officer. And that's all on the video. And as we were doing that, Micah noticed a DHS car parked just down the block on the corner. And the guy inside had rolled his window down, and apparently Micah witnessed him.
Yeah, he basically just, you know, pulled out his phone and videoed us. And I just said, hey, he's videoing us, and didn't think it was any big deal. And we just continued to document, you know, I guess you could call it the police state, and getting the information out. And that's when everything kind of
Yeah, so we decided to go get closer and take a look. As you guys can see in the video, you know, we go there, and all we did was cross from one side of the street to the other. The side that we crossed on where the car was, there, the sidewalk was blocked by their giant fence, so we just walked along the side of the fence. We passed by the car, and as you can see in the video, we took pictures of the license plate, and that's when the other two cars pulled up and kept us there and started demanding papers from us.
And so you've got, quote, federal protective officers under the larger Homeland Security umbrella parading as federal police. What kind of jurisdictional issue is that, first of all?
Well, we were unsure what to do with this whole incident. Back in Houston, we're pretty adamant, as you guys have seen on our videos before, about not identifying ourselves. These officers are not showing identification, but telling them who we are. And we tried to do our usual procedure with that, and again, in the video, the guy says, I don't want to hear anything from you. I just want you to show me something. And I didn't even have ID on me. I just happened to have my birth certificate with me. And I guess if I hadn't even had that, then we would be going to lock up for 72 hours because they said there's a law that requires you to identify yourself to the federal government. And we haven't been able to confirm whether that's true or not. But, you know, we are essentially just pressured and forced into that.
Generally speaking, though, that's a color of law issue. Go ahead, Micah.
Yeah, we're just saying we were coerced into giving our identification. We said we didn't want to, that we wouldn't fail to identify ourselves, but that wasn't satisfying.
It's amazing, though. You've got the TSA invading not only Tampa, Florida during the RNC, but bus and train stations all across the country. They've begun working their way into sports events. They've told us they're coming to shopping malls. But you're not supposed to question that. You're not supposed to film it as that. But the perception is that filming it is the crime now, or that protesting the RNC is somehow the illegitimate action, not these manufactured parties that have hijacked our countries, not these G20 globalist events trying to impose outside jurisdiction over our constitutional republic. None of that is supposed to be seen as illegitimate. It's supposed to be the fact you're there to protest, the fact you're there to film.
Yeah, and you know, the TSA is an issue that we keep particularly close to heart because, we were on InfoWars before talking about getting rid of the TSA on Houston buses, and that was something that we see as a good victory to show to other cities. And so when we saw them on the Greyhounds here, we're like, we got to get video of this. We got to let, you know, Occupy Tampa or We Are Change Tampa or whoever's out here trying to do some activist work, let them know that cities such as Houston can and will put an end to the TSA. So that was the reason we started doing that as well. And I agree with you that a lot of the protesters here seem to see the problem with the Republican Party, but some of them aren't so ready to call the Democrats as part of the problem. But there are a lot of people as well, though, when me and Mike are out there chanting, you know, say no to Obama, say no to the two-party system, a lot of people recognize that. So we're out here mainly trying to cover the news and trying to put a message out there to remind people that both parties are responsible for what's happening.
And it's a long-term process to have people wake up, but regardless of your views, even if you have an ignorant view about the way the system works, you obviously still have a right to join and protest. But back on the TSA issue, I just want to point out what your group of citizen journalists did because it was effective. First, you filmed the fact that TSA had begun doing bus inspections in Houston. You had video of the press conferences with the Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, and so there was no denial issue because it was on tape and you'd proven it. Then you took your group and other people of similar mind to the council meetings, to the Metro hearings, and put pressure on them, and they were forced to back off.
Yeah, definitely. We want to use that as a model for other cities. Anybody else who's watching and seeing this, we're trying to set up a different plan of actions dealing with the TSA, dealing with sustainability, taking on fluoride, taking on, you know, any of these issues and try to set up a plan. And we encourage others in other cities who find ways that work. Let the rest of us know. You know, as we're seeing with the RNC, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, they're going to change the rules anytime they want, anytime we get close to, you know, almost beating them at their system. So it's time for us to really start focusing on what we can change locally. And sharing that with each other.
Right. Can you guys describe more broadly what kind of scene have you seen in the different protesting groups? We've been told that the police outnumber the protesters something like 4-1. Have you seen people being allowed to protest, or are they cracking down in many respects?
I've heard numbers from 4-1 to 6-1. And we've seen everything from Secret Service, Department of Justice, National Guard, sheriffs, police. I think for the most part, the local sheriffs and police have been generally friendly. They have come in the turtles to come between, I guess, one protest we saw, or counter protest to Westboro. They came in between the people that were counter-protesting Westboro Baptist Church and basically sandwiched themselves between the two. But we haven't really seen much trouble with the local police, just a very large presence, bikes, motorcycles, horses, little golf cart things.
Helicopters
everywhere, three or four helicopters. You get pretty used to the sound of them.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing the police state pretty visible, but as Micah said, for the most part, with our efforts, we try not to generalize any group at all, including the police. We recognize which cops do work against us and work against the Constitution and work against freedom. So we're going up to the cops and saying, thank you guys. We know you would never turn on the American people. We know you guys would never hurt your own people and never defy the Constitution. And at the very least, trying to get them to think about maybe possible orders that they have received. And we've got some pretty positive response so far. Other than being hassled by the federal government and the DHS, I think that the cops here are just generally trying to keep things calm. And to be honest, the presence is much, much smaller than it was in 2008, and I think a lot smaller than the organizers planned, because we interviewed some of the organizers earlier, and they were... I'd say that they're happy with the feel of the thing, but as far as numbers, it's kind of disappointing.
Right. And that message about police is important to get out. We do know a lot of police either are constitutional or want to be if they're allowed to follow the orders they're supposed to follow. The problem is a whole nother cadre of police are being indoctrinated on these color of law ways, on top of the problem with TSA and other new entities that really there's not even established practices going on.
Yeah, exactly. They're running wild, and you know that's why it's important for us to reach out to the officers, because we still do have a chance. Some of these people that take up positions of law may already be indoctrinated, and some of them even get into those positions so they can exercise that power. But there are others who generally get into the military or police because they want to help, and we need to reach out to those people, because you know if everybody who's paying attention to what's going on, not only here at the RNC, but the police state being built up and the talk of false flags and the elections coming up, we really need to speak up to more unity rather than division.
Well, just add any other details you've seen on the ground there in Tampa, or what you think about where the electoral process is going in terms of the larger awakening. Are people in general across the country waking up? And then let us know where we can find your work, too.
Well, I'll say a little piece and let Micah say his mind. I really think, as far as I'm concerned, this is all necessary. You know, a lot of people who support Ron Paul support freedom, and even those who like the ideas of Ron Paul but chose to stay out of the political process, we're witnessing the collapse of the Republican Party by their own doing. And, you know, we can speculate on whether they're doing this on purpose or not to push us towards, a bigger plan. But what I'm seeing is that we have people out here on the ground, people who already know the political system's messed up, and others, though, who are finally saying, you know what? What is the point if they're just going to change the rules? And that's where we want to step in as activists and as community builders and say, like, this is important. These things are happening. But come, you know, show them a way, an alternative, that we can do this, that our communities can start building and start working together rather than focusing on electoral politics or the presidency to save us. Because I think that if anything, as far as elections are going to matter, it's going to be on the local level. So we're going to work harder back in Houston to put people in positions that represent freedom, and also working on building alternatives to the system itself.
Sure.
Certainly. I think alternatives to the system are the strongest things we can do economically, personally, education-wise. In addition to that, I do think more and more people are growing to see the similarities between the two-party system, or between the two parties, and recognize that there's you got to choose principle over party, that there's good people in both parties, and then there's good people that aren't in either party. The other thing I'd say is anytime we bother to get up off the couch and act, something happens. You know, we meet new friends, we find another way to work, someone gives us a tool that we can use in our work, new people come along that help it to work better. And I just like anyone that's frustrated with anything out there that wants to work for a better day to realize that part of it, that when you do something, things happen.
All right, well, thanks for joining us, guys. Keep us posted on any new developments. But, of course, you could find the Houston Freethinkers at their website, HoustonFreethinkers.com. They're doing a lot of good work in a lot of different areas with all kinds of different issues, so it's a good place to stay in touch with. Thanks for joining us, and we'll speak to you in the future. And Derek Brose and the other guys in Houston have also been doing work at fluoridefreehouston.org. I wanted to let you know about that website as well. We'll be back after this with an interview from street artist Mir One. Stay tuned.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity products. Aaron Dykes lost 92 pounds. We're going to show you some before and afters. Aaron, break down what happened, your story.
I've worked really hard with diet and exercise to try to lose weight, but I just didn't get the results. It just didn't happen. Then I saw what you were doing with InfoWarsTeam.com. I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I got it because I wanted to feel better energy. I wanted that nutrition. Didn't even understand how that could kickstart my own weight loss goals. But the products did that for me. I found myself suddenly losing weight, more energetic, wanting to exercise, wanting to eat the right foods.
And they don't even advertise it as weight loss. I want to challenge our radio listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com. Sign up as a distributor and get wholesale pricing discounts at InfoWarsTeam.com. Alex Jones here with a very important announcement for Truth Seekers. We've carried a lot of amazing films and books over the years on the online video bookstore at InfoWars.com. And out of all the titles we've carried, one stands out because it is just so chillingly convincing. And that's Dreams from My Real Father by Joel Gilbert, available at InfoWars.com. This film exposes the fraud that Obama is like nothing I've seen. If you want to know who Obama's real daddy is, this is the film for you. Don't forget, your purchase supports our broadcast and our growing media network. You'll also find at InfoWarsShop.com, None Dare Call a Conspiracy by Gary Allen, the book that woke me up. We're also carrying Behind the Green Mask, UN Agenda 21, by Rosa Corey. This book is coffin nails to the globalist takeover. The Greater Good, the most professional and up-to-date film I've ever seen, exposing the scourge that is vaccines. These titles and a lot more are all available at InfoWarsShop.com. Alex Jones here with a message to fellow freedom lovers. The prognosis for the entire planetary economic system runs from bad to worse. The globalist model is to shut down societies and starve patriots out until they acquiesce to the global takeover. That's why we've assembled the most vital and important preparedness items at InfoWarsShop.com. These are items that I did research on, that I personally use. We've got the Life Straw, so you can turn fetid water into safe water anywhere you go. The KTOR hand crank generator to charge up key equipment during power outages or out in the field. Strategic Relocation, 3rd edition by Joel Skousen. When Disaster Strikes by Matthew Stein. Therosafe, used by Homeland Security to protect yourself during any radiological event. Hand crank shortwave AM/FM radios. Everything that we've researched and found to be the best is available at InfoWarsShop.com, and your purchase makes our InfoWar possible. We're getting prepared. Are you? InfoWarsShop.com. Sick of the globalist eugenicist control freaks adding poison to your water and laughing as you get sick and die? Start purifying your water with ProPure. My friends, I've done a lot of research, and the best gravity filter out there, bar none, is ProPure. And it's available discounted at InfoWars.com. Its filters are silver impregnated to prevent bacterial growth. There's no priming required. It's NSF 42 certified. Optional fluoride filters can reduce fluoride up to 95%. Easy to set up and use. Doesn't require electricity. Purify water from lakes, streams, ponds, and wells. This filter system leaves in beneficial minerals, which is key. Save money by not buying bottled water and avoid BPA that leaches from the plastic. ProPure is the best gravity-fed filter out there. It's what my family uses. InfoWars.com already has the lowest price on ProPure. But if you add the promo code WATER at checkout, you get an additional 10% off at InfoWars.com. You can also call to order 888-253-3139.
We are back on the InfoWars Nightly News, and we're joined now by Kalen Aucherman, better known by his street artist moniker, Mir One. He's been a graffiti artist since at least 1986 and has been known by names including the Michelangelo of graffiti. He has his pulse on the culture, and as you're going to see from a lot of his artwork, he's politically as awake as well. We're going to hear from him what he thinks about a lot of current events and where art and culture and our entire society is headed. Joining us now is Mir One. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. What's up?
Well, first of all, what is your take? We have an election coming up. Society is in many ways turned against the establishment. There's a lot of alternative news information, a lot of alternative culture that has taken root through the internet, through the streets. Give us your overall breakdown on where we are at this point in time.
I guess I'm highly frustrated and upset with the whole system of, you know, puppeting choices. I feel like voting at this point, other than just holding on to our rights to vote, is useless. I would hate to see that right taken away, but the options we're given with the ability to vote, we're just placating ourselves. It's really it's a broken system. And, you know, I feel like whoever you put in charge, whoever you replace the last idiot with, it's just more idiots trying to represent idiocy. And, you know, it's a broken system. You know, we need to fix the system before we worry about the representative.
Right. And so, but I'm interested in fixing the system through our alternative systems and spreading a message in a new way. And that's what we're dealing with, the technology. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Tell us about how you woke up, how you got involved in art, and some of the major projects you've been involved in.
Well, I've been, I guess, as far as art goes, my mother was an artist. I was raised by her from, you know, single parent upbringing in Los Angeles here. And so I was highly influenced by her. And we both, I had a lot of political discourse in my little family once a week, talking about the news, talking about economy and stuff like that, and watch my mom and uncle and grandmother get into bickering fights over this stuff, get very passionate over it. And it's been part of my dialogue since a little kid. And around 1979 or 78, I took a trip up to Oregon, and a friend of my mother's gave us a cassette tape that had a lecture on the future of our planet with global warming and the illusion of democracy crumbling apart and kind of this really frightening view of the future of war and economic slavery and, you know, polluted realities. And so I guess back then this was highly fascinating to me, and it's been a source of my dreams, a source of my inspiration. A lot of anger I feel about society and government and authority figures in general, which has been expressed in me being a graffiti artist for decades now. This has been a big source of energy for me to pull from so that I can express myself, you know. The world seems pretty confusing, and there's not many places you can go to release these emotions or these ideas, and so artwork has been a great facilitator of that for me.
Right, and we're specifically showing viewers right now a video of your Allegory of Complacency. Among other elements, it includes a big pyramid with an all-seeing eye, a very familiar theme to our listeners. But what inspired you to this and some of your other major works, and just give your point of view on that?
Yeah, I guess traveling around the world and looking at money has always been really interesting to me. And the most interesting piece of money in the world to me still to this day is the $1 bill from the United States. It's a very frightening type of noir, strange, dark, mysterious piece of paper. Never really understood it as a child, and I was always fascinated in understanding the iconography, especially on the backside with the Great Seal and some of the symbology that's embedded into the number systems that are represented in the eagle, or, you know, the all-seeing eye, the Great Seal. These are powerful mythological iconographies, and I've been really interested in understanding what do they mean, how they have an effect on us. And what is mythology, you know? Like religion and many things, why do these ideas that we can't fully interpret have so much power over us? So I've been deep into research, I'd say, for a good two decades, fascinated. You know, I started out with Behold the Pale Horse when I was in high school, and that kind of really got me into digging deeper, you know, what do they call it, data mining online and whatnot, and, right, and researching as much info as I can. And, you know, what I've come to terms with is this idea of this pyramid you know, the separate eye that floats above the lower base is really a metaphor for the elite power and the working class that this world consists of.
Samir One, you're explaining some of the symbolism in your painting. Of course, we see an all-seeing eye with the masses of humanity at the base, and you're explaining how this represents an older allegory for you.
Yeah. I guess years ago I read this poem by Plato, a 2,500-year-old poem of the Greek philosopher called The Allegory of the Cave. And it inspired me greatly because it made me realize that we Americans are falling short to the same problems that people have been falling victim to for thousands of years on this planet. And it's basically wool being pulled over our eyes. And the poem was about a group of slaves that were captive in a cave. And they sat on a log chained to each other, and they stared at this wall. And behind them is a blazing fire, and their captors used hand signals to create puppeteering type of animal shadows on the wall. And these prisoners believed that this is what reality was. And one day when the captors were away, one of the prisoners stood up, took his chains off, and walked to the end of the cave to where the light was coming in. He peeped his head out and realized that there's a beautiful world of trees and fresh air and rivers and valleys and mountains and other humans. And he ran back out of amazement to tell his people that there's another reality actually taking place, and this is not it. And out of fear, they told him to be quiet and put his cuffs back on before they got in deeper trouble. And it just it reminds me of the way we allow the nightly news and the newspapers and our institutions and our educational systems to corral us into thinking certain ways with religion and everything else that kind of tints our vision of what's really going on around here. My mural, I guess, is a beacon for those who are looking for a way out. They're looking for an alternative way of interpreting reality.
Right. I mean, that's profoundly on point because you were talking about the symbolism. It's been seen in secret societies for hundreds, thousands of years, really, going back to the old Egypt systems. And there's kind of one meaning on the surface for the public who are under this limited paradigm, a controlled perception. And then these same symbols have deep, inclusive meaning for the people who run the societies that run the world.
Yeah.
But then But then street art today is, in a way, hijacking that and kind of rebranding some of the same imagery. It's very interesting.
Yeah, some of us are, you know. It's a hard battle out here. I mean, I stand alone quite often. There's only a handful of us that really dig deep into the symbolism and into the intentional purpose of this type of thinking. This type of thinking generally isn't just to have lightly over a cup of coffee or something and go about your day. This type of thinking is transformative. It's meant to basically change your perception on life and give you a backbone, give you some hope, give you something better to believe in than lies, you know?
Exactly. Well, you know, hip-hop culture in general and street art has gotten, you know, the term street cred lends itself to those kind of artistry, the idea that it comes from the people. But at the same time, through the record companies and the controlled corporate media, we see a hijacking of all that and kind of a narrowing of those messages. I mean, can you talk about the impact of that kind of art over the past several decades and why it appeals so much to the general population and ways that it's been controlled?
Yeah, well, I mean, just for me in general, as a teenager, it was appealing to me because it put me in the driver's seat in life. I wasn't sitting on the back of a ride any longer being taken around and chauffeured around by reality. I was making the decisions to go out and vandalize public space because public space was dissatisfactory to me. You know, I'm a taxpayer, I'm a citizen, I'm a human being. I belong to this place just as much as everyone else does, but I have no access to anything. I'm shut off. I am basically just a number that pays revenue continuously. And graffiti art was complete liberation to that concept. It basically said, you know, this is your world. What do you want to make out of it? You can make anything out of this place. And so I think that's the main thing of these alternative subcultures that continually develop in our society is this desire and this need to break out of this conformity, this box that, you know, that, that they really want to put you in, because you're much more manageable in a box. When you're outside of a box, you know, they don't necessarily have enough hands to hold on to you. And so I think there's a lot of liberation in the subculture.
Right. And you're touching upon some of the issues of, like, is it ethical to vandalize public spaces with artwork and that kind of thing.
Right.
And you've worked with a lot of the other famous artists or had run-ins with them, people like Shepard Fairey, people like Banksy. I saw the documentary on Ron English, and he's gotten himself into a lot of trouble. But is it ethical or is it even effective to kind of hijack corporate ads for things like McDonald's and kind of resubmit the signal in a way that's critical and maybe wakes people up to the issues of how they're being controlled?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we live in a society that's run by advertising and marketing pretty much, and the media, which they're all in bed together, but it's like an image is so powerful. An image is a thousand words and, you know, all these metaphors. And so we're inundated with billboards and advertisements and store names and this and that, and everything's got a name and a logo to it and a design element, and this is eye candy to us, and it's attractive, and it mesmerizes us, and it gets us caught up in spending money on things we don't even need or want just so we can feel the gratification and the connectivity to society. So, you know, I mean, yeah, you know, graffiti is the antithesis to that. You know, it takes that concept and flips it into, you know, this liberating, self-perpetuating, generating type of energy where, like I said before, I think we're seeking a way out, and whatever leverage device we can come across that'll get us out of that norm is becoming, I'm really grateful to say this, is becoming actually popular now. Mm-hmm. For many years of my art career, especially after September 11th, I was, you know, on covers of multiple magazines at once, and TV shows, and art books, and art shows, and whatever else that we desire to get ourselves into. And a lot of that stuff ended for me right after September 11th, because my art was unwilling to play the game. I was continuing to criticize, critique, and look into and underneath places that I wasn't invited into artistically. And so I think I got myself into new forms of trouble. They weren't with the law for breaking the law and doing graffiti any longer, but now they're new forms of trouble with just the upper levels that just want to silence that type of work. They didn't really want that type of work being exposed. And I went through some years of hardship to defend my right to do this work, to speak my freedom, in a sense, you know.
Mm-hmm. So we've been looking at your complacency mural with the all-seeing eye, and I guess what are chemtrails as well. Can you talk about some of your other, what do you think are your most powerful murals or images you put online, and what are some of your most well-known images?
Yeah, well, God, I've got so much stuff, but I think that some of my more well-known murals point the finger to the blatant, obvious wrongdoings that go on around here, like chemtrails. I've enjoyed putting kind of a modern-day spin to a Renaissance-level type of painting, where it's not this beautiful clouds and this damsel and this man's arms and this romantic vision. It's a kid with a slingshot using his imagination to shoot a jet out of the sky because it's leaving, you know, toxic white stripes everywhere that's falling down in a powder form, destroying, you know, reality. I've always loved the Renaissance paintings, you know, this beautiful, beautiful, lavish art.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always felt that, you know, for instance, I feel that art is like an entity. It's a living energy that is like a transistor radio. You can tune into it and embody that power of that art and let it flow through you and be a creative individual. And so I think that art itself has gone through some interesting twists and turns. You know, previously art was patrons and...
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. Let me just interrupt you, because all those commissioned art from the Renaissance, in a way that allowed them to control what kind of messages come out. And street art, by contrast, has been largely independent, decentralized, and kind of unstoppable. But aren't there forces kind of influencing those messages as well?
Yeah, totally. You know, I've been working on this kind of idea recently, which, you know, I've been telling people this, that so through the Renaissance, art finally began to find a little bit of the individual in there. And through the early industrial era, we saw some amazing paintings being created by people that wanted to paint the worker suddenly, or wanted to paint the landscape, or wanted to paint their interpretation of God, which was unheard of previously, or paint a spiritual experience or a political idea like Goya, which is 5th of May, you know, which is talking about the Spanish Revolution. But these paintings were very liberating to people because they were breaking away from the norm of control of thought, basically, similar to people who were writing books who were being condemned to their death for having literature that spoke out against the church or against the monarchies. And so, you know, art became so free that the bourgeois figured out that they wanted to take it back again. I feel that art became so boring by the 1970s through commercialization and replication and just marketing and advertising that it had to break away from the aristocrats and become graffiti. It had to become illegal. It had to take itself to the streets and give itself back to kids and teenagers and people that were poor that didn't have access to art because it was locked up in the museum. And what we see now is the commercialization and the reassociation of the advertising, marketing, cartels, you know, kind of feasting on graffiti art now. I got to say, you know, street art and graffiti art is very popular globally, and the majority of it no longer speaks to the poor or the alternative or masses of people in a sense of liberating them from Illuminati or, you know, the control systems that go on around here. So it's just interesting. It's just an analogy that I've been coming up with lately. And,
I think Shepard Fairey's an interesting example of that. He famously did the Obey mural with Andre the Giant, a real tongue-in-cheek kind of anti-establishment message, and hundreds of other famous murals that ended up on streets all across the country and later the world. And then, but in 2008, we saw Shepard Fairey's artwork used for the famous Obama image, which at least I view in many ways as an artificial movement to support someone who really was part of the establishment all along. How do you see that in terms of Shepard Fairey as an example of street art being hijacked?
Well, you know, he's a very wealthy artist. He's made millions of dollars. And I'm sure that he, as a businessman, is more concerned with, you know, generating the money and keeping his business up every month than being a radical or a revolutionary or even a true artist. I think that true artists are not really caught up in the money machine. If you're caught up in the money machine, and we all are, we all have rent to pay, we all have to buy our food, we all got to put a roof over our head and whatnot, but there are exceptions of how far you get in bed with these concepts and ideas. And I mean, I've struggled very hard to keep my message true and critical, and I take a lot of heat for it. And you know, I don't want to throw any badness on anyone out there. I respect what everyone does, but yeah, I'm definitely not trying to do some Obama art. Very critical of Obama. I believed in him. I voted for him. I voted for him for two reasons. One, because he was a black man, and I want to see some change socially go down in our country. But two, he was a stand-up human that stood tall and spoke loud and proud and interesting and intellectual. I thought, you know, this is a good man. I'm gonna put my two cents with him. And he's completely let me down. He's done absolutely nothing. I consider him a puppet failure. And, you know, just it's really woken me up to the fact that it almost doesn't matter who I vote for. I'm not going to be satisfied because the system has a gun to their head. And, you know, these people aren't going to do anything different than the left hand.
Well, that's very true, yeah. Which is why, I mean, how can people who are awakened on any level, whether they're artists or just people finding information on the internet, whatever it is they're involved in, how can we take that energy and keep it outside of that limited two-party system, outside of the same old establishment that's only serving the same interests we've seen in a concentrated way for the past 100 years, but more broadly throughout the power of all of history?
I think that people need to not fear the idea of change so much. And I'm not talking about change of Obama's type of change. I'm talking about serious political change where it is no longer a two-party system. And I don't even want a three-party system. I think we need to broaden that out way broader. You know, I think that there's a lot of changes that we could apply here. Change is applied on us all the time, but we never ask for real change. You know, we're constantly looking to medium it out and make it normal again. And that type of thinking has gotten really old. You know, I think that we have to demand for more options. And as long as we're stuck in this materialistic, monetary, capitalistic society, we have to start demanding what we want to spend our money on. And we have to, you know, we can make a lot of change just with our money alone. I mean, if corporations want to rule and be considered people too and have voting power, well, then we need to take our money and cause these corporations to start providing the goods and services that we desire that serve us as human beings and not as complacent people to just get more of the same. That's one idea.
Well, I agree with you in general. I also think, you know, a large centralized system, even if it's giving us the goods we want, we have to diffuse that power, take it back to local levels and other levels too, to kind of reinstate a balance of power. But where do you see the larger awakening going?
Well, I think that it's already taking place. I just think that there's so much co-option that's collaborating with the evolution of our thought process. It's really hard to decipher through and see what's real and what isn't. You know, like the Middle East, the whole uprise that's taking place over there over the past few years, it's hard to tell whether that's being induced by the CIA or by MI5 or KGB or whoever it might be. It's hard to tell if it's just over oil and we're trying to prevent China from having access to Africa or the Middle East oil. It's so hard to tell what's what, but we do need more people to rise up. And it's not, I've come to a point where it's not about a violent revolution anymore, even. It's really just about people just shifting their focus and no longer buying into what we don't want. I mean, maybe we will have a violent revolution one day, but until that happens, I think there's a lot of things we could be trying to do. And we got to stop allowing the system to put blocks in front of us, like electric vehicles or cleaner water filtration systems or solar power or wind generation. Like, these ideas get so much heat and so much resistance. And we know this stuff is good for us. And then they tell us some BS of why we can't have it, and we just put up with that. And I think that there's a lot of, you know, when George Bush won the first time, I was shocked that nobody stood up and had a major shutdown of society. You know, we got lied to. We continuously get lied to, but we continuously allow them to lie to us. And I'm dying to see people get out their jobs, get out their daily schedule, walk out in the street and stop taking it. I mean, I think everyone wants that, desires that. My mother always wished that so much, you know. But the Occupy movement is pretty interesting. It's pretty beautiful to see that happen. And it's just frustrating to see how it all falls apart and how people end up going back to their normal ways of thinking and being. And I think that comes from the programming, you know, and it's like, it's really important to look into deeper subject matter and to deepen one's own views on stuff and stop expecting the media to just deliver what we need to know. You know, it's like I'm getting my daily report on how I should behave. And that's got to end.
Right. And we see also these kind of revolutionary ideas being hijacked in a steam vent kind of way. Opposition to Bush, for instance, against the war, will be voiced first on the outside of the Democratic Party, but eventually absorbed by it, touted by them in rhetoric. But then it ends up not being the real system by the time a Barack Obama gets elected.
Yeah, really, 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 really perplexing, you know. And I mean, it makes me angry, and I'm just curious if anyone else out there is angry, because, you know, it's just, I'm just baffled by it, you know. I didn't choose, or I don't think my mother chose to have a child. I don't think my father chose to have a child to grow up like any of us. None of our parents chose for us to grow up into a polluted, screwed up, politically confused reality. It doesn't make sense. And it's really screwed up for so many of us that we are now at this point where, you know, I think about, I'd love to have a child in the future. I don't have any kids, but I have to think about that constantly. What type of a world am I going to leave my child in if I have one? And that's a heavy thought to think about.
I wonder
how many people out there just picking out kids left and right that don't think about that. And that's another scary thought, you know. Our priorities are really screwed up. I think we need a priority check around here. September 11th was the wrong way to wake us up. That's not doing it, you know. We need something much more powerful. And, you know, that's why people like me and people who I'm influenced by, that I'm really interested in, such as yourself, you know, it's important that we continue to do this because I know that it's inspiring to other people. I know it inspired me as a child, and I hope that I'm inspiring people right now, and I hope to continue to inspire people to think differently, to think outside the system.
And artwork's obviously very powerful. I was going to ask you that, too, because you're kind of talking about your political inspirations. You've talked about all your artistic inspirations. How has Alex Jones and other alternative voices, those who are branded conspiracy theorists, for instance, how have they affected you personally, but how also do you see them changing our cultural discussions, and which direction is that going?
Well, yeah, man, I mean, it is a huge influence to me. Like I said, I started off with Behold the Pale Horse, and I just moved on from there from book to, you know, now the internet is so great. It's amazing to see that the whole world can access this information now. When I was a little kid, this information came to you on a cassette tape from some very strange people that were very paranoid and didn't want anyone to know that they gave it to you. Or it came from a book, and it was like a leather-bound book that no one wanted to read. And so if you read it, everyone thought you were weird. And, you know, it just goes down the system like that of how this information has been really hard to seek and find out. And now with the internet, it's amazing to see that everything from Richard Hoagland to Zachariah Sitchin to, you know, ancient technology to secret societies and, you know, just general technology and how technology manipulates our thinking and our general living conditions. It's amazing that we have this access now. And it's a beautiful thing to see that so many of my peers are now hip to these ideas, and it's not old news, it's not weird news, it's not like unbelievable. There's a great deal of people that really know that this is what's happening and they're woken to it. And, you know, that's one of the most positive things I can say going on right now is the mass awakening of people looking towards alternatives finally.
And I think with the internet, we have really a limited window to kind of solidify that we want this information outside of your limited controlled system. And I think that's the message we need to think about, how to make sure this information is permanently in the broader sector of public thought so we can work more towards what is the truth and what kind of solutions we really want to see.
Yeah, I'd say for the past 20 years, a lot of my friends and peers recognize me as a political artist, as a radical, as a rebel, in a sense. And I guess my rebellion type of work that I put out has at times caused people to be like, oh, there goes Mir again, or, oh, you're still on that stuff. And that was frustrating. That took me a decade and a half to get through this with everyone to the point where now they're like, oh, man, I love it when you talk about that. When you share these ideas with me now, I go and I research them and I find out so much more. And it's like, wow, it's amazing that this stuff is real. And, you know, this is just peers walking through a grocery store or walking through another city will walk up to me and say this now. And it makes me feel really great. You know, it's a great feeling to know that we actually can think this way finally, that we're not crazy, that we're not going to, you know, go to jail or be assassinated for thinking this way or be punished, you know, or really, that there's enough of us thinking this way now. This is a social discourse that we all can take part in. I think that's really important. And I think that that's one of the main ways that this radical rebellion will eventually become, hopefully, part of our normality. At a point here, is that the masses will just shift their thinking. And that's always been my greatest hope, because it's not like I wouldn't love to see some crazy revolution take place and us overthrow the institutions and tear down the walls of these horrible places and throw out these sick and twisted individuals on their rears in public and actually throw some of these people in prison for stealing from us and lying and causing great human atrocities around the world. But I mean, I would love to see some of that. But simultaneously, I would be just as happy, if not more happy, if we could all just shift our thinking and all these manipulators would just become instant losers. I think that would be the greatest punishment and retribution we could experience.
Oh, that's the truth right there. And our cultural thinking, our spiritual awakenings, those are more powerful than trying to steer movements through the political system, because they're so easily hijacked. So many revolutions have gone bad. And so in closing, talk about where we could find your work, where people could see more examples and follow the things you're doing. But more broadly, give us some tips. What have you found to be effective in the vein of culture jamming, trying to insert a message that people don't want to hear? How do you break through? What kind of symbolism is most powerful? How can we use the internet, things like Facebook, relatively controlled paradigms, to push messages they don't want to see?
Yeah, well, I guess some of the interesting stuff that I do is, you can look at conspiracy theories and get freaked out over them, and then you can compare those to actual news-related write-ups from around the world. You can check out some of the interesting technology that's being researched at places like MIT out in Boston, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Just any of the iconography that's out there that seems weird and mystical and hokey, and it's almost unbelievable this could be happening. It's really interesting to go into the history and look at where these iconographies come from, what they actually meant to people long time ago, what they mean to people now. And why are they still used? I mean, if these things are meaningless and they're just imagery and it's just old-timer stuff, then why are we still using this stuff now?
Mm-hmm.
I think that more than telling people what something is, I like to inspire people to do the work themselves and have their own revelations unfold. But there is plenty of access out there to basically review any of what we're talking about here online. And I guess you can find more of my work on my website, which is www.mirrorone.com. I'm on Facebook, Mirror One. I'm also on Twitter.
And just for
there.
People watching, that's spelled M-E-A-R and then the spelled out number one.
You can check me out at www.mearone.com. That's mirrorone.com. I'm also Mirror One on Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me there. I want to give a big shout-out to Vapors Unite and Don Mega for posting me on InfoWars website originally. And tomorrow night at 9 p.m., KCET will be broadcasting the Brit Week Battle LA with myself, Near One, Man, Inky, and Ein from England. And just a big special thanks to Candace and Vestalia at Brit Week and T4C for putting it all together.
We appreciate having you on, Mirror One. Again, you can find his artwork at mirrorone.com. I know a lot of older listeners may be wondering, why are we showing kind of the street art hip-hop culture thing? Well, people really respond to this today. It's part of the larger debate about what is language, what are these symbols, where do they come from, who defines what they mean. And it's not all the same stuff. You'll see some really uninspiring garbage messages, but you also see a lot of conscious people using this kind of street art mentality to try to get out a message. That's why we have Mirror One on. It's very interesting. I'm sure you've seen a lot of the artwork here in the video, but do go check out his website, because it's fascinating stuff. It has deep meaning, much of it, and we appreciate him being on. Don't forget planetinfowars.com. That's where you can do your own independent messaging. You could put your artwork up there. You could do videos analyzing the symbols you see in the media and a whole lot more. Don't forget to support us too at prisonplanet.tv. That's all for tonight's InfoWars Nightly News. Thanks for watching. I'm Aaron Dykes.